It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman.
I'm Ross Reynolds. It's Friday the 13th, but do not give in to triskaidekaphobia. Today is your lucky day. The Record is live broadcasting from Georgetown.
We're here in the lobby of Button Makers. It's a local company that makes personalized buttons. This is The Record's second official remote broadcast, and the goal is to give our listeners a picture of the issues at play in a specific neighborhood.
We're going to be talking about transit in Georgetown, raising children here, arts, there's lots of arts, food, and safety.
So, what's it like to live and work in Georgetown? Our producer, Arwen Nix, came out here last week, and she asked people their thoughts on the best and worst of life in Georgetown.
Everybody knows everybody.
So what is the worst thing about living in Georgetown?
Like I said, it's hard to get sleep sometimes around here.
What is the best thing about working or living in Georgetown?
I would say there's a pretty strong sense of community here, and everybody's just weird enough that it makes weird people feel pretty comfortable.
What is the worst thing about working or living in Georgetown?
Well, it's definitely really hard if you ever need to get here by bus. There's not a lot of buses. And, you know, when I'm here by myself late at night, I tend to get a little bit freaked out because we got the freeway right there and we get a lot of people trying to hitch rides and you know, coming in here and asking me if I want to, you know, have a hit off their bong, which maybe I would, but not when I'm working, you know.
The best thing about living in Georgetown is that I know all of my neighbors.
And what is the worst thing about living in Georgetown?
The worst thing about living in Georgetown is probably the air quality, because we're between the I-5 and the harbor over there, and also the railroad tracks. So there's a lot of transportation down here.
What is the best thing about working in Georgetown?
Free beer.
What is the worst thing about working in Georgetown?
Free beer.
This is The Record. I'm Ross Reynolds.
I'm Marcy Silman. Hey, Ross, you remember what Georgetown was like 15 years ago?
You know, I never came down here till about 5 years ago. There was this event called Artopia. There were all the art galleries were open. There was music. There were power tool races. And I just fell in love with it.
Call it Art Attack now, and it's coming up on Saturday tomorrow. Well, we used to come down here years ago to buy the best house paint in the city. That was a long time ago. I'm sure it's still good. But more over these last 15 years, this industrial neighborhood has undergone a ton of changes. For one thing, there's a thriving business district along Airport Way. Back in the late 90s, this part of Georgetown was almost completely boarded up.
Well, Liddell Sines has been here for 15 years. She moved here back in 1998. She owns Carlton Avenue Grocery, one of the two small grocery stores here in Georgetown. She's also the self-proclaimed Georgetown historian. She has been doing ghost tours in Georgetown for 9 years. Liddell, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So what brought you here in the first place?
I could afford to buy a home here in 1998, so that really brought me here. And then after I moved here, I got to know my neighbors and found that it's very much has a sense of community.
I was wondering if you could describe what this place was like in 98 when you first settled here.
It was like an outpost, you know. It was, you know, we had these Wild West style buildings down here, and it kind of felt like that, but it was all boarded up, as you said. We had one bar. Jules Mays was the only bar open. But it's nice to see that in 15 years we have all of those storefronts that were boarded up now have these nice independent businesses.
What's the biggest change you've seen in Georgetown over the last 15 years?
We have a thriving independent commercial district, which we didn't have before, which is exciting and nice. And it's nice to see that we have younger couples moving in and starting families here. And I've seen kids grow up and start families of their own in the 15 years I've been here as well.
For you, Liddell, what's the biggest problem facing Georgetown?
The pollution, noise pollution, diesel exhaust pollution. There was just a study done in the last couple of years that studied the diesel exhaust, which they found causes asthma and lung cancer, and trying to determine what those long-term exposures are. We're now in the second phase of that project, and in 2014, we're going to put that study in action, and I actually participated in that, so that's sort of exciting to be a part of, too.
Well, you really notice the noise. You're right by I-5. the jets going into Boeing Field come overhead. A train goes by occasionally. I'm told that you can tell a tourist Georgetown because they keep talking while a jet's flying overhead.
Or they look up and wonder. We have something called the Georgetown pause here, too. I don't know if you've experienced that. Any Georgetowner will have a conversation, and they'll pause in the middle of it, let the plane go over, let the train go by, resume the conversation as if nothing happened.
Tell us a little bit more about what the best things are about living here.
I think the best thing is the community. I've never seen a group of people just come together. There's a sense of pride here. You know, we're weird, we're quirky, we're unique, and we're very much opinionated, and we're not afraid to stand up and say, hey, you know, that's not right. This is a neighborhood, and we want to be treated like a residential neighborhood.
You know, I think of it as the last outpost of Bohemia. Do you think that's the way you see it when we talk about weird and wacky? It seems like that is definitely an element.
There is an element to that, yeah. When we saw the artists move in and occupy these great buildings that remain, we see that come through, and so I think that's a correct
now,
description.
People have described your grocery, the Carlton Avenue grocery, as kind of an information hub. So if you go over there, like people sitting on Cracker Barrels and smoking corn cob pipes. And
if I had room, I'd have a potbelly stove sitting there with a couple of chairs and a checkerboard or a chess set. I just don't have the room because we're quite small. The Carlton Avenue Grocery has actually been there since 1911, so I'm kind of quite proud to be the current caretaker for that historic property.
Now, if I stopped in there on a given day, say within the last couple of weeks, what would be some of the conversations I'd be hearing?
Well, currently what's been going on is we're looking at the cuts to the Metro, to Metro's funding. So, you know, looking at how those are going to affect Georgetown as well as Beacon Hill and Southeast Seattle. So that's been a conversation actually this week that's been going on and getting the word out about that so people will be informed.
The buses are well used here.
Yes, I believe so. A lot of people that live here actually work downtown and in other places. And one of the buses that go across Beacon Hill actually takes us to other shopping places like McPherson's Vegetable Market up on the hill, Red Apple, and taking people to the VA as well as Harborview.
Got to ask you about the ghosts. What's
the ghost?
What's the best ghost here in Georgetown?
Well, that would be Peter Gessner. He haunts the Georgetown Castle, which is our most famous haunted property over on Carlton.
The castle?
The castle, yes.
And what does he do?
He has been known to move things around. He's been sighted. And what happened was is he committed suicide after his wife left him for another man in the house. He built this beautiful Victorian house, and his wife ended up not moving in. And he drank carbolic acid in the back bedroom and passed away, you know, and killed himself.
That's so a bad way to go.
It's a bad way to go. But they see him every once in a while walking around in the kitchen there, near that room.
What's the best-kept secret about Georgetown? Now, I know you're not going to tell me the best-kept secret because you're going to want to keep it a secret, but what's a secret you could reveal to us today about Georgetown that people who maybe have come down here often don't know about?
Well, I can't tell you the best-kept secret.
Okay, second best-kept secret.
I really thought about that, and, you know, we have views. I don't think people realize we have views in certain buildings and homes with views of downtown and Mount Rainier.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
As much as we have views here.
We're in a valley, too, yeah. So it's just surprising that you can see downtown from
Although not today. We're pretty much socked in today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Liddell Sines, thanks for stopping over.
Thanks for inviting me.
Maybe she'll move some stuff out and you'll be able to sit on a Cracker Barrel over there sometime. She's owns the Carlton Avenue Grocery, and she can take you on a ghost tour of Georgetown.
You're listening to The Record, live from Georgetown with Ross Reynolds. I'm Marcy Silman. It's The Record on KUOW, live from Georgetown. I'm Marcy Silman.
And I'm Ross Reynolds, and maybe you don't know anything about Georgetown. It's a little bit north of Boeing Field. It's right next to I-5. If you want to get to Georgetown, you can walk. If you're hardy, you could hop a freight. The train goes right through here. If you're even hardier, you could drive or you could take a bus. There are three buses that stop in Georgetown, the 106, the 124, and the 60. More than 1,700 residents here use those buses. King County Metro has always been facing budget shortfalls over the last few years, and they are apt to lead to cuts. Kevin Desmond is the general manager of King County Metro, and he joins us now. We're broadcasting from Button Makers in Georgetown. Pleasure to have you back, Kevin.
Nice to be here, Ross.
So you usually come to our studios in the University District by bus. Were you able to take the bus down here today?
No, I'm on a timeline, so I'm afraid I did drive, and it was tough to find a place to park, but I did find a place to park.
Tell me, I mentioned three routes that serve Georgetown, the 124, the 106, and the 60. Did I miss any?
The 131, 132 cup would also serve this area. Yep.
Or you could hop on that jet that just flew
by. That's right. You parachute out.
You could parachute down. Shoot out here. Now, you at Metro, we've talked about this a lot, are facing a 17% budget shortfall. You've known that for a while. In recent months, you've come out with some of the specific lines that will be cut. How is that going to affect Georgetown?
Well, you know, what you heard from your previous guest, Ludell, it's a pity that we even have to be talking about this. We really should be growing our service. And a community like this, a growing community, a very vibrant community, to even be considering losing any bus service, let alone a fair amount of bus service, is really unfortunate, because it is part of the economic health. It's part of the vibrancy of any community to have a really good mix of transit service. And unfortunately, like every community in King County, Georgetown is also going to suffer some of the reductions. So each of the routes that serves Georgetown will see some reduction in service.
Now, as we've heard, it's a big topic of conversation here. And some people in this neighborhood feel as though they're less well-served by bus than in other neighborhoods, that they're taking more of a brunt when it comes to cuts and lack of service to start with. What do you say to them?
Well, I have to tell you that every single community that has communicated with us about the proposed reductions, and that's pretty much every community, all say the same thing. Why are we getting so many cuts? Why are you picking on us, as it were? And unfortunately, as I said, the cuts are widespread. They're balanced by the three main factors that we use to decide where and how to reduce service. We wish we could use these factors to grow service.
What are those three factors?
It's a combination of productivity, social equity, which brings into consideration income levels, people of color, and so forth, and what we call geographic value, which is really how to knit and keep the whole community, you know, have skin in the game throughout King County. But we have to find a balance between those three factors to decide how best to allocate, whether it's very limited resources in this case, or hopefully someday we can start growing again.
So is that to say that in a neighborhood with a lot of low-income people, that would be considered in their favor when it came to your decisions about bus routes?
So as we balance those three legs of the stool, if you will, the social equity piece really brings into sharp focus transit-dependent communities. So transit-dependent communities largely will receive less reductions than perhaps other portions of the service area because they score points in the social equity scale. That's not to say the reductions in any community are not going to be very significant.
Are they losing any bus lines entirely here?
No. The services here primarily, the 106 will go away altogether, and it's replaced largely by the 60 and the 124 to get back and forth. As well, the 130-131 will not be operating late at night into downtown Seattle.
Now, this is an industrial neighborhood. What challenges does that present when it comes to providing bus service? Is it particularly difficult to serve an industrial neighborhood?
No, different than any other. As a matter of fact, a community like this is probably somewhat easier to serve because it's densely populated. There's a lot of activity here. It's an activity center. And that's really what drives productive service, because it means more people are likely to choose transit and choose it for a variety of different trips. So every part of the service area presents its various different challenges. This should not be a particularly difficult area to serve, at least to get to certain locations.
Now, the state legislature has been talking for some time about coming together and passing a transportation package. How might that help this situation? Is there time to avert the cuts that you've already worked out and put on the table?
There is time. We know that the Senate and the House continue to debate the overall statewide transportation package. The larger piece of that would be a state gas tax, largely for highway projects. But it does include what we've been asking for all along, is a local option funding mechanism that we could take to the voters of King County to allow the people of King County to chart their transportation future. I don't know if that bill's ever going to make it out. There's still, I think, a gap between the Republicans and the Democrats in the Senate, but everyone continues to hope that we have a transportation package. If not that, I think the county's willing to look at a second option.
The transportation package is huge. This part of it that would help out Metro to not have to cut this transit service is a small part of that, as I understand it. It would allow us to tax ourselves more to restore the bus service?
Yeah, if you will, it's a very small part of the package because it does not raise the revenue to preserve and help grow Metro service. It then brings it back to the people of King County, and the people of King County would then have to vote for, in this case, a motor vehicle excise tax, in addition to the statewide gas tax that would be created by the transportation
bill. So what are your lobbyists telling you in Olympia about this part of the transportation package? Is it in favor within the Republican-dominated Senate and the Democratically-dominated House?
Well, fortunately, it was included in the House bill that passed out of committee last session, and it is included in the Majority Coalition Caucus's bill on the Senate side. So it does reside in both places. So I don't think that is part of the argument. I think the other features of the statewide program are still very much in debate.
So that part of the package might get caught up in all these other issues.
Exactly.
So what's your drop-dead point? I mean, you have the plans out there. We will cut service in these areas. At what point are you going to have to say this is happening?
Well, this certainly puts everybody, particularly our decision makers at County Council, in a very difficult position. At this point, we're out in the public talking about the proposed reductions. We'll go back, assemble the whole proposal based on the current financials and our sales tax in late March. We'll send out the proposals to the County Council in April. By the beginning of June, we're asking them to make a decision. And we could start reducing service as early as September of next year. So our drop-dead date is probably in the June timeframe, but we need to know if we're going to have a funding source. So I think what Executive Constantine and many of other of our leaders are looking for is to be able to get some kind of funding package before the public before that June timeframe so we know what to do.
Finally, we're just about out of time, but if this does pass the legislature, when would there be a public vote to restore the transit cuts?
I think people are talking about as early as the spring is possible. I think the council would like to get that done before we take the proposals to them in the summer.
Kevin Desmond, General Manager of King County Metro, thanks so much for coming down and talking to us here
in
Georgetown.
This is The Record on KUOW, today live from Georgetown with Ross Reynolds. I'm Marcy Silman. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to visit Georgetown's Equinox Studios, a community of almost 60 artists whose work ranges from blacksmithy to photography. One of the artists at Equinox is abstract painter Gail Howard. Over the years she's been down here, she's seen Georgetown undergo massive changes.
Oh, gosh, it's so different. It used to be kind of the Wild West. I don't know. I mean, it's always been a really supportive community, but there's been a lot of sort of unsavory aspects. I remember my brother going to the gas station saying, well, if you ever need to buy crack, you know, the gas station right there. And that's really changed. It's a really tight community. A lot of artists, but a lot of families too.
Painter Gail Howard, she works in Georgetown's Equinox Studios, and we're going to visit there in just a couple of minutes. This is The Record, live from Georgetown.
Coming to you today from Georgetown, hard by the highway, by the railroad tracks, by the airport. I'm Ross Reynolds.
I'm Marcy Silman. Seattle's Georgetown neighborhood has been a magnet for a lot of things, as you heard, especially artists since the late 1980s. But over the past decade, artistic Georgetown has really exploded. And in many ways, Equinox Studios lies at the heart of that art scene. This warren of artists' workspaces is in a squat blue industrial building on a pretty nondescript Georgetown side street. Sam Ferrazzano opened Equinox in 2006 after he lost his studio space in West Seattle.
I brought my 10 tenants and came to Georgetown, which was kind of like homesteading in the Great Plains back then, and put everybody in a corner and started building around them.
How did you pick Georgetown?
The availability of well-priced industrial space and the ability to make a lot of noise, and it was kind of the Wild West back then still.
So. What do you mean by Wild West?
There's just the sense here is that you can do kind of whatever you want in Georgetown. I mean, it's a very industrial neighborhood. At night, nobody's here except us. And so, you know, we will be out on the street with a bonfire and, you know, hanging out and enjoying the solitude of Georgetown. But at that point, especially, there was a lot less attention to Georgetown. So nobody was really here.
I wanted you to talk a little bit about the origins of this building before you guys came and made it into studios. What was it?
Originally, this building was the company that made Norton bomb sights, which is the crosshairs that you look out the bottom of a plane, and huge advancement in killing, maiming, and conquering. But it was a military secret thing back in 1941, and so they were right near Boeing. There's a big safe next to me in the next room here, because they had to protect the military secrets. This whole neighborhood originally was a residential neighborhood for people that worked at Boeing, and then it evolved back into this industrial sort of complete industrial use.
This looks still like a kind of heavy duty space. What kinds of artists have their studios here?
We have everything from blacksmiths and metal sculptors to painters, photographers, movie makers, glass artists, ceramics, woodworkers. Almost every medium that you can think of is represented in here. There's about 60 different artists and probably about 60 different individual practices. So
you mentioned, Sam, that when you first brought your 10 original tenants with you to Homestead, I guess, to use your Wild West analogy, that this wasn't yet a neighborhood really on the radar. What role have the artists and the growing arts community in Georgetown played in defining what this part of the city has become?
I think the artists are kind of like the glue that has brought the residential community and the industrial community and the commercial communities together in Georgetown. I think they've kind of brought the definition to it here, the reason why people come to Georgetown. It's this creative enclave. It's this energy that people want to see.
Once upon a time, Belltown was that neighborhood and brought a lot of people, including a lot of people with more money, to redevelop. How is that playing out in Georgetown right now?
Well, we're very lucky to have a very high benzene content in the air. And so the gentrification is at a much slower pace. Because of the airport, the height limitations on building, because of the industrial nature, all of these things contribute to sort of that slowed gentrification. I think that it's inevitable it will start growing. I don't think it'll ever get to be a bell town.
What attitude do you pioneers in Georgetown have to folks who are either coming in to visit or with speculation on their minds?
Well, that's an interesting question. There's a fair amount of people in Georgetown that are going to fight to the death to stop developers and gentrification. My opinion personally is that we can, as a community, plan what we want to see in the growth, and then we can foster that growth and invite what we want to the neighborhood so that we're very intentional about what happens here.
What do you envision? What would you like to see in Georgetown?
I would actually like to see it be more artistic, more industrial and living mixed together. I envision taking over this whole block and trying to make expand upon what we have here, which is a really amazing community of people. I want to give more artists the opportunity and the space to do what they do and to thrive in this. So I would like to see that, but I understand that density has to come to Georgetown. I mean, as a city, as the whole city, we have to consider that. What I would like to see is that we do that in a very intentional way, and that we create what we want here and make it responsible to its history and to what we want today.
That's Sam Ferrazzano, artist and the founder of Equinox Artist Studios. By the way, Georgetown's second Saturday Art Attack is tomorrow from 6 to 9 in the evening. Think art walk on steroids. A lot of fun.
This is The Record. I'm Ross Reynolds.
I'm Marcy Silman, and The Record is coming to you live from the Button Makers in Georgetown today.
And Marcy, it's kind of extraordinary to me that of all the people who work and live here, how many of them say this is an exceptionally tight-knit community.
Mike Hitt works at a music shop in Georgetown. He thinks one of the things that keeps this community so bonded, Ross, is what everybody has in common.
We're all just working people down here. I don't think anyone down in this neighborhood is really too caught up in their own little world to forget about the other people around us. And I've lived in other neighborhoods, not just here in Seattle, but elsewhere in the country, where traditionally on paper it looks like it should be the excellent neighborhood, the one you want to raise your kids in. But I've never found the sense of family that I found in this neighborhood of Georgetown anywhere else.
my kid who lives and works here in Georgetown. Marcia, I met another hardworking guy down here last week, restaurateur Matt Dillon.
And Matt Dillon, you may know, owns Sitka and Spruce, Bar Ferdinand, Bar Sayor, and the Corson Building, which is here in Georgetown. And frankly, a fine dining restaurant in the last place you would expect to find one.
I'm standing under the Corson Street freeway exit ramp, right by the railroad tracks. But right in front of me is a building, and it looks like a French villa.
If you took everything else around it out of it, you could put yourself right in the middle of Tuscany.
That is Matt Dillon. This is his restaurant, the Corson Building. Out front is a stone fountain topped by a naked lady.
You're at the front of the restaurant. This fountain was here. It did not look like this. It was not operable.
Who is that naked lady, by the way?
I do not know. She's never told me her name.
Matt Dillon started the Corson Building in 2008, 1 year after Food & Wine magazine dubbed him the nation's best new chef for his debut restaurant, Sitka & Spruce. Matt was acquainted with an artist who lived in the Corson Building, and he always imagined what it would be like to make it into a restaurant. He spent time in Georgetown, had friends at the coffee shop and the record store. He lived in an apartment above the restaurant after it opened. Georgetown is many things, but a hotbed of locavore, star chef eateries, it is not.
I think initially there was a little bit of a reaction, not negatively, but a lot of questions of, oh, this fine dining restaurant is coming into Georgetown. But people in the neighborhood, we asked them to help us work on the space. So whether it was putting up the iron fence or having the tables made, you know, I even employed some of the houseless characters that run around the neighborhood to help do some stuff when we were cleaning off and moving bricks out of, that we found in the soil, that kind of thing. And because we approached it that way rather than just kind of getting a big architectural firm and designing it and opening it and kind of isolating ourselves from the rest of the neighborhood, we wanted to really be a part of it. So we're definitely more of a destination restaurant. So we get people from the neighborhood that are coming here, but just not that often. And then we get people from all over the world, I think, that come and eat here. So,
what's the best thing about being in Georgetown, and what's the worst thing about being in Georgetown?
Boy, that could be a really long and really short list, I think. The best thing about being down here is the openness in creativity. If you walk down to the coffee shop and ask someone for their advice on how to build something or how to be a part of the community down here, whatever question you had, someone would help you. If they couldn't answer the question, they would help you find the answer to the question. It's a really creative neighborhood and a really open neighborhood. The people are very unjudgmental, I've found down here. It's quite beautiful that way. You don't see that a lot. So the worst thing about being down here, maybe the pollution. The train noise is pretty rough when you're eating dinner and you have a train go by, but it's also part of the character of the space, so it's hard to say that it's the worst thing. But when you're thinking hard and trying to put a menu together and then the train rolls by and blows its horn, you know, it's not quiet or thoughtful to you, so that's pretty rough.
For people who you talk to, and maybe they don't know Georgetown, but you say, oh, I've got a restaurant in Georgetown, what kind of reactions do you get about what they think Georgetown is versus what you know it is?
Nowadays, I think the reactions are usually really great. I think Georgetown over the last couple of years has gone through some rough times, too, with Airport Way being closed and the Rainier Brewery and a lot of the construction that's going on there. I think people haven't really known what's down here and what is going on down here. So, but when people were like, oh, you have a restaurant down there? Man, that's really far away, but it only takes 8 minutes to get here, and Airport Way is never that crowded, and driving to Ballard sure can be a pain in the ass. So,
tell me about it. That's where I live. I got to ask you about Fugazi, because I read that Fugazi, this punk band, was like a big inspiration for you, and at first glance, it's like a fine dining restaurant. How did that inspire Matt Dillon? How did that punk rock band Fugazi inspire Matt Dillon?
You know, they sort of set up the way I felt like parts of my life I wanted control over. So for instance, with the restaurants, we don't do any advertising. It was really important to me that with the restaurants, I had sort of a heightened sense of social justice and community needs, and that wanted to participate in that. So for instance, every year we've done a fundraiser for Teen Feed, which is an organization that feeds homeless youth in the university district, and giving back is really important. I think that they sort of instilled that idea in me through their music, and I want to instill that idea into other people through food and through our restaurants. They were more than a band. They were just being part of Washington, D.C. I feel like a big part of Seattle, and I want to be Seattle. So my way of being a part of our city is by doing it through food.
You told Food and Wine magazine your favorite guilty pleasure was Cheez-Its, and your dying day restaurant would be an all Cheez-It restaurant. Do you still have that enthusiasm for Cheez-Its, the irresistible cheesy snacks?
No, I don't really. It's somewhere deep down. You know, the problem was is I'd have a couple, and then I'd eat like a whole box, and I'd get sick. So I can't really do that to myself anymore. But I dream about them. I think about them a lot. Every time I'm in a store and I see them, I want to buy them or just sit in the aisle and take my shirt off and eat them or something. I don't know, something real weird like that.
Matt Dillon runs the Corson Building Restaurant in Seattle's Georgetown neighborhood.
Well, you know what that music means. It's Bond. Nick Bond. I'm still dreaming of Cheez-Its with Matt Dillon, but with Ross Reynolds, I'm Marcy Silman here in Georgetown, and the weather outside lately has been a mix of frightful, delightful, something in between. Teens, the temperatures over the last weekend. Well, weather guru Nick Bond has kindly agreed to come down to Georgetown today to look at the forecast. It's great to have you in person with us, Nick.
Well, thank you.
Well, let's get the easy stuff out of the way, the weekend forecast.
Yeah, well, today it's one misty, moisty morning, and we're going to be having some more of that, certainly clouds. A little bit of rain tomorrow afternoon into Saturday evening, maybe lingering into Sunday. Sunday, not too bad. Again, cloudy. And a little warmer temperatures, high 40s, low 50s. And then early next week, really pretty quiet.
Quiet. Well, that's interesting. One thing I've noticed, we're just into halfway into December, but really over the past couple weeks, it seems like it's been exceptionally cold and maybe exceptionally dry.
Yeah, this is our wettest time of year, and we're, since October 1st, our rainfall's been about half of what it normally is.
Really? Do you know why?
Well, don't get me started. I mean, the whole kind of atmospheric patterns and all that sort of thing. Actually, in all seriousness, no, we don't know it, why these kind of perturbations occur, but that we just know that they happen. We happen to be suffering through one right now.
So what does that mean if we see half the rain that we normally do? How does that affect us?
Well, the main thing is our snowpack. And also there in the Cascades, it's about one-third to two-thirds of normal. And we count on that snow to get through the summer and hydropower and all sorts of things. So it's too soon to panic, but there's plenty of winter, left. But still, it's something to keep an eye on.
Do you and your colleagues have models that predict maybe more precipitation coming in the near future?
The next couple of weeks, it doesn't look like much relief. And so it's there is a weak to moderate system coming out of the Gulf of Alaska midweek, and then give us a little bit of rain down here, snow in the mountains, maybe a little bit chillier weather behind it. But the long-range progs, than what we say, the computer models are indicating drier than normal for the next couple of weeks.
I'm going to start saying long-range progs. Over the past weekend, Nick, you were 100% right because you promised me that that we were not going to have snow. There was a lot of hoo-ha about how we were going to see snow in the lowlands. But when we get to this time of year and the fact that we've seen those really, really cold temperatures, right, we are thinking along those lines. So looking ahead, any possibility of a white Christmas?
Well, that happens about 5 to 10% of the time around here. And so you can't absolutely dismiss that possibility. Okay. But I wouldn't get your hopes too high for that.
We've been talking about portmanteau words, and one that we've just coined, to talk with you. Snownado, a giant whirling tornado of snow. How about that?
Well, that'd be fine by me, certainly.
Well, you guys like it when we have that kind of thing, but you're not expecting anything like that?
No, no, I'm afraid not. Again, there is some chillier air coming in behind the system midweek. And our computer models, our PROGs,
that, like that.
We're indicating that there's some decidedly cold weather behind it. They're backing off on that, and so I'm just I'm not expecting anything too dramatic.
Now, one thing I was thinking about when we hit that week or so of really cold weather was that that seemed like January to me, that it seemed untimely. We usually see a week of that really chilly, clear stuff. So are we just out of whack totally?
Well, we're just, the atmosphere has gotten into a pattern in which it favors colder weather in the kind of western U.S. and central U.S., and especially it's been cold in Montana and the Dakotas and places like that. And so it does happen this time of year. You're probably right that it's a little more frequent in January, but it's certainly not unheard of.
Well, right now I'll just take comfort in the fact that it's going to be sort of temperate and a little bit wet this weekend.
Yes.
Nick Bond is Washington State's climatologist. He works at the Joint Institute for the Study of Atmosphere and Ocean. He's with us on the record at KUOW every Friday, and today he's with us in Georgetown. I'm Marcy Silman.
I'm Ross Reynolds, and coming up tomorrow in Georgetown, you may come under attack from art. It's going to be their annual art walk, their monthly art walk, starting at 6 o'clock, going to 9. You're listening to KUOW Seattle.